Blog Talk Radio.
Chan Kitty. Ha ha! Right now, Jackie Chan Kitty is, I think, is still getting over from shock from a little accident I had the other day. In the middle of the night, I decided to turn on the stove. And the heater wasn't working, so I was like, well, I guess they have to turn it on for me. I guess they can have the people from the gas company turn it on. Well, I don't know if they always say that it's true if the cat lands on their feet or not, but there I was, you know, doing whatever on the computer, and the cat actually was sleeping on top of the refrigerator, and she actually rolled off, and I tried to get up and catch her, and she just smacked on the stove. She's okay, but lo and behold, I'm laughing at it now. I'm really, really laughing, but I was scared out of my wits. I went to go reach and try to grab her. When I went down, I did something to my chest, and I thought I was having a heart attack. Yes, lady. Gentlemen, I thought I was going to die, and I'm laughing now. At the time, it wasn't funny because I was actually on the internet with an EMT, which I have to say, who was my hero, Gabrielle I just thank you. He was an EMT back in Boston that I work with, and he was actually on the computer with me because I thought I was having a heart attack. And like I say, I'm laughing at it now, but, you know, he stayed with me, and I was like, I could not breathe. And there I was, bad pains in my chest. He says, okay, I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm going to die. I'm sitting there. I know people are going to think I'm nuts because I'm laughing now, but I almost thought I really was going to die. I never had chest pains before, you know, and such. So there he was, and he stayed with me till after 2 in the morning, and I'm like, you know, I couldn't talk, couldn't breathe. So, you know, I think I'm a cat that has, like, 9 lives because I was actually in a really serious bad car accident. I flipped the car over. I was actually going to the set of Game Plan, and I actually was driving there, and I was supposed to be in a second scene or something, you know, for set. And what happens is I had this older car, and it hydroplaned, and what happened is the car actually flipped over and hit a guardrail, and it flipped back over. Now, I had my seatbelt on, and nothing happened. But I guess I was in shock, and I drove the car home, but the car actually didn't die until I actually got home. So I think I really, really have, 9 lives. But anyway, just to let you know, I got a guest tonight, and I'm going to find out what this guest is doing in the acting world, what his life is all about, because I like to bring on inspirational people. And I get so excited. Do not even ask me how I'm staying up from going from playing a superhero in Falcare on Saturdays, you know, doing a lead, to having a nice surprise on Sunday where I thought my scene was going to get cut. It's called essential realism. Let me tell you, I had a nice surprise. I had my Kato costume on. I ended up being the head ninja. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. And I had to fight the 4 superheroes. So it was a nice surprise. And I think I'm going back for another scene to play a zombie. Yes, that's right, Friday night. I hope they kill me off, make my head explode, or like stick dynamite in my mouth and let my butt explode or something like that. I mean, I want to die, and so they can multitask me with many different zombies for Friday night. So excited. And Saturday's Falcare again. Yes, yes, very dedicated. And speaking of dedication, I'm pretty sure the person that I'm bringing on right now is a very dedicated man, young and hot, hardworking. Let's see if this is the person. Give me one moment, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, Shelley.
Hi, is this Rick?
It is Rick.
Hi, I just want to hope I'm saying your name. I'm doing right. Is it Dumont? Is that how you say your name? Is that correct?
Yep, that is correct.
Okay, because I always butcher everybody's names. Not that I do it on purpose, because I'm a funny talking gal. So I think I dig it.
You could say Dumont.
Oh, okay. Because I try, I just try the best I can. But, how are you doing?
I am doing incredibly well. How are you? I heard you might be a dead zombie blown up and all
yeah.
that good stuff.
Yeah, there's a big film that they're actually filming in Maine, and it was it's called Essential Realism, and they did so many different scenes. I can't explain the plot, but they had a pirate scene, a steampunk, and I was in the ninja scene, which was a total surprise to what ninja, boss ninja. What was that? That sounded like you were having a heart attack or something there. You okay?
No, my dog bowl, I accidentally kicked it.
You accidentally kicked your dog?
I have a couple of dogs.
What kind of dog is it?
I have a black lab and a golden fox.
A golden fox?
Yes. She's a golden, or she looks like a golden, but she's about 35 pounds, and we call her a fox because she moves so incredibly beautifully graceful through, you know, stopping on dimes, cutting and cornering, and just so gorgeous when she runs. It's amazing. So we call her a fox.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to perv your profile more because I was trying to do so many things. Here I am because, you know, I'm trying to get in the shower because I have to speak to some of my contacts and making more contacts in California. And we'll get off the show at 11 or, you know, whatever time you can do. And, and it's like in California, it'll be 9 o'clock, 11 o'clock here, and I was working full time. And then it's like, you know, radio is great because you can sit there, you can be on the toilet. I always carry around so you can be on the toilet. Hopefully you don't make any noise. Seriously, I got to towel on my head, and I'm in my pajamas. I've got little kitty pajamas on with blue pants. So, you know,
excellent.
Radio is a wonderful thing. So you
it
can be doing
whatever.
Yes, it is. And you can be almost as crazy. I mean, respectful, but crazy. But anyway, enough of my chit-chat craziness here. I want the viewers to know about you. Now, Rick, before we get into the acting, where are you from?
I am from New Hampshire. I'm in Madbury, a little town just west of Dover.
Oh, and
if you come all the way west from Dover, you come to Madbury.
That sounds like some nursery rhyme, over Dover or something like that.
Well, yeah,
it does.
It's the old catchphrase here in New Hampshire. We usually say, you know, go over to Dover. You know, Dover ends in E-R in the, you know, proper spelling, but most people in this state say Dova.
Ah.
It's over to Dover.
Yeah, you sound like Boston.
Kind of like park in the car in Harvard Yard. It's over to Dover.
You can't park the car in Harvard Yard. There's no parking spaces, so you're going to take the red line in. How do you know that? You got to know that.
Well, let me tell you, I always find a parking space in Boston when I go down there.
Yeah, well, that's because it's like when you live
there. I end up parking for free too, which is nice.
Yeah, well, you gotta know the spots. Like, you know, when you go into Boston, it's like I usually park in East Boston, and you take Maverick in, and it's like right there, and you can, like, you know, free parking. So I should start my own Shelly tours, but
or you just like drive in circles for a while, and then you ultimately someone will leave eventually, and you just park.
Yeah. But it's crazy. You know how it's crazy in Boston. It's like, it's totally nuts. I mean, people are, you know, can be nuts, and they want to kill you over a parking space.
Well, I also had a great advantage for many, many years when I was a police dispatcher, and I used to be able to come down to town and park at the Mass State Police Barracks and go to the Museum of Science or the Hat Shell, and I would park at the police station, which
That's
was
sweet.
Really, really nice. Yeah.
Well, you actually, before you got into, like, acting and such, you were actually a police officer, is that correct?
Not an officer, but a dispatcher.
Slightly different.
Like, I was a civilian. I wasn't certified as a police officer. I was a guy sitting on the phones answering 911 calls and all that good stuff. And then telling the cops where to go, which was a great mantra. It was, you know, one of the bumper stickers I used to have on my car was, dispatchers tell cops where to go.
Ah!
So we were able to say, hey, you know, it was fun. Had a good time with that.
Yeah. But 911, it must have been kind of stressful, right?
Oh, God. How much time do you have?
Oh, yeah.
Tell some stories.
I want to hear something, like, something crazy that you're able to talk about. Tell me at least one story.
Well, I'll tell you the most moving story for me, or actually two of the most moving stories, if you want to hear. They're relatively short, but one was when I early on in my career there, I took a it was a 911 call, but it wasn't 911 like it is today, where you can see where everybody is and all that good stuff. It was actually from a different town, and it came over to me, and it was a situation where a young boy, I think he was 2 at the time, was bouncing on his bed with his older brother, who was like 4 or 5, and the kid conked his head on the headboard and went unconscious. And, you know, I'm on the phone with the mother trying to find out whether or not the kid's breathing or not, whether or not I had to do CPR instruction for her to try and get the kid back to life or back to consciousness. And all the while in the background, I hear, Johnny, wake up, Johnny. Mom, why isn't Johnny awake? And I'm just, and I was freaking out. And because I was really, really, really new at the job at the time. And it was really, you know, really emotional because my children at the time were roughly the same age. So it was, you know, really stirring. And ultimately, you know, I did a little research afterwards and found out that the little boy was fine. You know, turned out okay, but it was a pretty emotional situation at the time for me. You know, as a newbie in that business, you end up having to have a thick skin. You have to have a thick skin to do that job. It's very, very, very nasty. And, you know, the other story that really impacted me, which then leads me into what we do today as artists, you know, the collective that I get to create with, is I had taken a phone call one night. You know, I was on a midnight shift, and it was probably 1 or 2 in the morning. And this lady had called up, and in keeping with Domestic Violence Awareness Month, this woman had told me that she had just been beaten by her boyfriend.
Oh, and God.
Unfortunately, she hadn't called on an emergency line, so I couldn't trace it. This was, again, back in the day before 911 was able to locate you. There was nothing I could do, technologically speaking, to find out where she was to get her help that she desperately needed. But I spent about 45 minutes on the phone with her trying to find out a name, a number, an address. You know, I was probing all over the place trying to find in some scintilla of information from her that I could use to try and find out where she was so I could get somebody to help her, but she never gave me anything. And at the end of this very, very long conversation, she said, "You did a great job. I'll come in tomorrow," and then hung up. And I went, if I was doing such a great job, somebody would be at your door right now trying to help you. And, you know, it was another one of those situations where it really struck me about how people, and I say people because both men and women do go through domestic violence situations, but in this particular case, it just struck me, and I have spent the next, you know, 20 years or so studying the I don't know what the word is, studying what happens, why it is happening, and how to best help people who are in such situations and, you know, give them some sort of inspiration to try and get help and seek the help that, that is out there. And so I definitely urge any listener out there who is in a situation where they are, you know, being abused either emotionally or physically, to use the system as their muscle, as their voice, to stand up and fight back and escape those kind of situations, because you don't deserve it. That's the damn sure. But as a company, it is. And as a company, one of the things that we do in our live art productions is we do them as benefits for local domestic and sexual violence support groups and also local animal shelters, because as an animal lover, I know that they also can be abused and sad and all that good stuff. So they need help as well.
Yeah. So have you ever rescued any animals and such?
Oh yeah. The golden fox, Layla is her name. She is a rescue from Tennessee. And as a matter of fact, I think all except for my black lab, who is named Laughing Willow, they're all cast-offs of sorts. You know, our four cats, and Layla are all kind of rescues in one degree or another. Not necessarily abused, but just rescues.
Oh gosh, it's like, and I think one cat is enough. You got like a whole whole side of cats. Yes,
it's madness over here. It's definitely madness.
I'm trying to figure out, because you know my cat, this little incident that I had. I mean, she's okay, but I think she's more scared. And usually she's always near me and stuff. And there was a little incident where I'm glad everything turned out okay. It was actually me that ended up getting hurt, but I think she's scared, and I'm trying to. She'd always be near me all the time, ever since I got her and such. And right now, as we're on the show, she's still on top of the fridge. She fell asleep on top of the fridge. She's fine and stuff and, you know, movable. Nothing's wrong with her. She rolled off the fridge, and I had the stove door open. I went to get her. I ended up hurting myself, but she fell and she whacked on the stove door. She really hit hard, and I picked her up and she's fine. The thing is, it's like she's been hiding, and now it's like she's on top of the stove, and I'm petting her and she's rubbing up against me, but she will not get off the top of the stove. And I'm like, I try to give her an extra, usually I put her on a diet, which I know she's mad about that because she got fat. And I had to, like, you know, try to be careful with her. So
right.
I got her a little bit, you know, a little bit of wet food just to see, to like, you know, try to bribe her. Then she got back up in the fridge, and I'm sitting here as we talk. Usually she's on the bed and stuff, and she's still on top of the fridge, and I cannot get her off the fridge.
Try catnip.
She's calling catnip? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to do that then.
Yeah, they can get her bouncing off the walls for a little bit.
Yeah. Because she just won't knock it off. I'm sitting here, and usually she's like, you know, I'm sitting here talking, and I'm petting her and stuff, and she just won't knock it off the top of the fridge. And you think, because of that trauma for her, because she was a stray cat, and I don't know, you know, whatever, you know, happened with her. I know she was left behind in my backyard. And I'm trying to sit here and wonder, you know, is, you know, she okay? I mean, she is, but it's just weird. She's never stayed up on the fridge this long. And I'm hoping when I go to bed tonight, she'll get off and just do a sneak kind of cuddle thing. You know, like, I'm going to cuddle with you when you fall asleep and when you don't think and expect it.
Well, there you go. And that's what they do. I mean, you know, cats, they have their own little world, and they move to a whole different drummer than you want them to.
They
certainly act. They act totally according to their own rules, which is awesome to watch sometimes. Annoying sometimes, but awesome to watch sometimes.
Yeah, well, they take care of, you know, it's easy to take care of them. You feed them, you know, they don't poop all over the place. They have a little box, and, you know, you take care of it. And that's basically, you feed them, you cuddle with them. They're still cuddleable. And, you know, do you have any, you know, going back to your dispatch and stuff, do you have any, can you tell us any crazy funny stories, something really funny where you're going, what the heck? You know, like, we can't believe it's happened, but it's something really funny. Are you able to talk about a story like that?
You're talking, like, from the dispatch world?
Yeah. Has anything, like, really funny going? It was kind of, they called in the 911, and it was just something that was so crazy, but it was funny at the same time. Not anybody getting hurt, but people call in, because I work in an IS, the phones and stuff, so.
There's a host of those. I mean, people have called in. You know, I've taken some phone calls from people who have, apparently, for the first time in their entire lives, ever gotten stoned, and they start freaking out because their heart starts racing, and they think their world is coming to a crashing end, and what those kind of calls made me think of was the Dan Aykroyd skit on SNL back in the 70s when he played Jimmy Carter. I don't know if are you familiar with that.
I remember SNL. I remember a little bit of the 70s because I was born in the 70s, and I remember like the 80s, and like, what happened with it?
Well, he was playing Jimmy Carter, and he was on, I forget the name of the talk show host, but he was on this talk show, and this guy called in, and he was tripping, and he was starting to have a really, really bad trip. And the host of the show was about to cut him off, but Aykroyd as Carter said, no, leave him on. I can talk to this guy. And he starts talking to him and asking him what kind of acid did he take. And he describes, you know, several different kinds. And he finds out what kind of acid he took. And he goes, okay, what I suggest, you're going to have about another 8 to 12 hours. And, you know, if you have a beer, go ahead and drink it. You know, if you have some music, put on some Allman Brothers and kind of like chill out and relax. And it was absolutely hysterical. And that's every time I get those kind of, or when I had those kind of phone calls, it made me think of Aykroyd as that character and how they wrote that. And I was like, and I love talking to people like that. You know, I had a woman call in, which was kind of sad. It was when I was working at 911. It was kind of funny, but it was kind of sad. It was like, oh, don't do this. But she had called in because her husband, they're elderly, and her husband had some sort of condition where he was on THC pills, prescription pills.
Oh, my gosh.
And one of their friends had given them a joint, or given him a joint.
With that? He took that and then a joint?
I think it was some sort of cancer treatment or something. It was medicine, obviously. But she called up, you know, looking for an ambulance because her husband wasn't feeling well. Nothing to do with the THC. But when she went to describe what was going on, she gave me the background history that you know, he has this medication, this prescription meds, and then proceeds to tell me that this friend gave her a joint that I immediately had to, unfortunately, not just tell the ambulance service, but I had to tell the police as well, because at the time, you know, thankfully New Hampshire has finally done medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, but at the time I had to alert the local police department that, oh, this lady told me that they had a joint. And I'm just sitting there going, please don't say that. Please, why? You know, I couldn't go, la, 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 la. You know, sticking my fingers in my ears. I had to do my damn job, unfortunately. But
yeah.
I don't think anything ever happened about it because, you know, the cops wouldn't care. Some 80-year-old
yeah.
man.
It's kind of like different
but,
and stuff. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and you have your crazy characters all the time. You're regular drunks, and you're insane people. You know, not insane people, but just the kooky people that call and complain about whatever.
Yeah.
It's fun. It was fun.
How did you get like from being a dispatcher, you know, working with the police, a dispatcher, into acting? Or, you know, things that you're doing now?
Okay. Well, it started around the year 2000. I had grown, I had become burnt out of that,
mm-hmm.
that dispatching work. And really, I mean, everywhere I looked, I was watching, you know, fathers with their kids. I was looking where their hands were when they were holding these kids, and I was seeing domestic violence in the supermarket. It was just, not that it was actually happening, but I would hear like an argument go on between a couple, and I would go, oh my God, what's going to happen when this lady gets home? And I went, I got to get out of this. I got to clear my head, because everything, it becomes so negative, because most of what you see in that field, in the emergency services field, is negative. It's not a lot of positive. And I got burnt, and I got an opportunity to become a journalist, and I jumped at it because I love writing. And I went out and I started writing for this newspaper in Southern New Hampshire, and they turned me on, you know, they gave me an entertainment coverage beat as well, which I love because I love music and I love theater and I love movies and all that good stuff. So I got to expand and experience that. But really what got me into the whole acting thing was roughly 2001. It was like a year into my job that a friend of mine and I from the paper went down to Boston to the Paradise to see his son's band play in the front room. And it just so happened to be on the bill that night was a band called the Dresden Dolls. And I don't know if you're familiar with them, but...
Why does it sound... That sounds familiar.
Punk Cabaret? Yes. Boston-based, they were really on the just-starting-out phase of their world. And I saw them, and my jaw hit the floor. And I just went, oh, my God, this is just astounding music, astounding theatrics. Just blew my mind, basically. And I did a little research on this band, on this duo, and I found that the drummer, Brian Biglione, he was from Milford, which was right in my coverage area. So, of course, my greedy little reporter head went, I get to chronicle this guy's entire career because he is based in my coverage area. So I'm gonna follow this dude, and I'm going to write everything I possibly can and prop him up and do what I can to help make him more known and their music more appreciated and more, you know, people looking to him. And I did. And once I met Brian and Amanda Palmer, who's the pianist singer of the band, it opened up a whole new world of artistic people for me and artistic musicians and just this amazing array of humanity down in Boston, the Austin area, and et cetera. And I give Brian like the ultimate tribute for me as far as inspiring me to say, I can do that, not that kind of stuff, but I can be myself. And I don't have to be self-conscious about my thoughts, my behaviors, my whatever. I can just be how I want to be because that's how he is. And then a couple of years later, I got this call from Bill Nichols, who was a director of, or is a director of, a little community theater company up in Antrim, New Hampshire, nearby where I was living. And I was told, pretty much told, we're doing 12 Angry Men on stage. You have to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, well, okay, I'm a theater critic, so I should find out what it's like on the other side of the stage. And I went on, and I did this production, had an unbelievably beautiful time doing it with a bunch of great people, and I got the bite. And it hard, and I just, like, took off from that point and started, you know, my brother and I wrote a screenplay a couple of years later, and we put it together and produced it with some amazingly awesome human beings. And many of them I still work with today. Some have moved away, too far away to actually still create with, but unfortunately. But we still, you know, many of them are still here, still with me. And it's, and three feature films later, you know, there's more and more and more coming.
Yeah, I was trying to remember, because I don't remember how, I mean, I'm kind of my brain gets kind of mushy sometimes. And I have so many people on Facebook. I can't even remember how we friended or something like that, because when people are friending me, it's like it seems like people know who I am, and I'm like, they're like, you know, I heard you from so-and-so and so-and-so, and that's what's happening more and more. And I'm like, you heard of me?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, really? And it's kind of like, I try to figure out, there's something I know about the person, and something I was trying to look through, like, everything was just crazy today in the past couple of days with filming and trying to get things set up for the show. And
sure.
It was something that looks familiar. It was some sort of film. It has, I don't know if this is right, it had something with communion or something in it. I don't know if I'm correct. Did you have
something? I'm sorry, had what in it?
Did the name Communion or something? Or?
Oh, yeah, Brothers in Communion. That was
okay.
That was the first film I did.
What year was that done? Why do I know that? Did you film in Boston? I don't know how I know that name.
We did some filming in Boston. Actually, funny story. We did one quick shoot at the reflecting pool downtown, and were approached. I don't know if anybody's listening from the Christian Science Monitor. Do not listen. Plug your ears right now, because we did film there. We did a shoot. We did one scene there. And it was totally guerrilla. And this, you know, Christian Science Monitor bike cop rolled up on us, and he's like, you're not filming a movie, are you? And we said, no, of course not. It's just a couple in love. And he's like, okay, I don't want to see this on a screen anywhere. We're like, no, don't worry. But we also filmed it. We also filmed at Nuggets, which, I don't even know, are they still opening 10 more? The record store?
What is it? What
Nuggets?
Is it? I know. I haven't lived in Boston for 4 years.
Okay. Well, we filmed in a record store called Nuggets, and we filmed, you know, we did some shooting on Yawkey Way and outside Fenway, and
mm-hmm.
we filmed in Alston. And the rest of it, most of it was filmed in New Hampshire. And we also got some great B-roll footage from San Francisco from a cinematographer out there who went out and shot all kinds of stuff in the Mission District for us, which was awesome. Absolutely awesome.
So what was the film about?
It was basically, it was inspired by my brother's life when he was undiagnosed bipolar, manic depressive, back in the early 90s. And he had spent about a year plus living in his van in San Francisco and self-medicating and doing a crap ton of journal writing, which was, you know, just beyond amazingly brilliant stuff, so powerful. And he and I kind of took some of his experiences and some of his journals and kind of built this story about two brothers from the East Coast who individually and then ended up reconnecting out in San Fran and kind of circling the drain of life through the underground, you know, drug party circuit kind of scenario, and because of mental illness.
Oh.
It wasn't a happy movie, but it was so much fun to film.
what did you have Boston actors in it? I know I heard it from somewhere.
Yeah.
And I
can't... Oh yeah, we had. It was all Boston actors, Boston and New Hampshire actors. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's
New England actors. It was all New England actors.
Okay, maybe I must have heard it through someone or something because I'm sitting here because I was like, I was doing a real quick, how do they call it, curving your profile on Facebook, and I was trying to go through it really fast, and I'm like, man, I'm trying to see how I know you from somewhere. And I was like, did we work on a set? It must have been through a mutual person we know each other or something. I can't
it's
even remember.
It's
got to
be a mutual person. I mean, unfortunately, I don't really recall. I know it was a while ago.
It's like you just connect, and I'm like, I was like, I don't have people on Facebook, but I can't remember. I was like, how do I know you? We just do. It just seems like, like the existence of God has always been there. It seems like the people that have been on your Facebook, you don't remember how you find them sometimes, they just always seem to be there.
Well, how many times have you been asked by someone that you actually know to say, hey, do you know so-and-so? Because they know you, and you go, huh? I don't know that person,
a lot.
They know who I am. And it's like,
okay.
Great. And then you find out, I'm Facebook friends with them. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. It's a small world. Even in Facebook, there are millions of people or something like that. It's a small world.
It really is a small world. It's a wonderful world these days.
Yeah. Yes. And with that, I mean, what else have you done? Like, what films and such have you done so far? Or what have you been part of?
I filmed my wife and I and a guy by the name, a horror writer by the name of Jason Korolenko wrote our second feature film together called The Bond. And that's a kind of neo-noir thriller, which is out or being released in the next couple of weeks and has been released. It's going out on the internet, and we're going to do some screenings in Ohio and here in New Hampshire and stuff like that. But so that is out, and we just wrapped our third feature last month called Fraternitas. And that story is a family drama, kind of a family drama about drug addiction and what it does to an individual and their family. And it's a story that kind of centers around, it's kind of taken a little bit from my existence where a entertainment journalist, kind of like a Hunter-esque kind of character, but more personable. Mm-hmm. He, after a stint in rehab, he goes back to his alma mater to be a professor and finds that the call of his old fraternity is pretty strong. And how he deals with balancing his work and his addiction and his family and his desire to help college kids through the process of going to college.
So it seems like you do a lot of drama, and I was like going through, and I was like, you look like a character, because I was going through and I saw something, trying to figure out, okay, there's something I saw. And I was trying to figure out, he must do comedies, because I'm, like, trying to figure out what you do. So I go to look, and I see this thing, it's like,
I don't know why it is that drama comes out of my head. I mean, it's the muse. I have written one, like, uber whimsical thing inspired by The Forbidden Zone. I don't know if you've ever seen that film. But everybody has to watch that movie.
Okay, now what is that about?
The Forbidden Zone is a Danny and Richard Elfman film. And what it is a story that Richard Elfman put together based upon the acts that the cabaret and vaudevillian kind of acts that he and Danny used to do before Danny broke out and went and started Oingo Boingo back in the 80s. But Richard took some of their stuff and built this film. And it is hands down the absolute most absurd, brilliant, inane, lewd, crude, awesome, funny. I mean, you put I can't even give you as many adjectives as it needs to have because it's just absolutely brilliant in its simplicity and its absurdity, and it's a musical, and it blows things like Rocky Horror and Hedwig. Those films pale by comparison about the absolute absurdity and the comical, whimsical, but yet still lewd nature of the film. But it, and it stars Hervé Villechaize as he's the king of the Forbidden Zone, and it's all about this woman who gets kidnapped.
Oh, you mean the guy in like the one that's in the plane. Okay, yeah I know who he is. Yes.
Yeah, and it stars him as the king, and it's all about this woman who from mainstream world gets kidnapped and held prisoner down in the sixth dimension, and his family or her family goes to try to rescue her, and it's utterly ridiculous, but it's so brilliant, absolutely brilliant film. And I wrote this thing, I wanted to write something ridiculously whimsical like that, and I did write something, and I don't know if it's as whimsical, but it's absurd. So, and we'll be producing that at some point in the next year or two, anyway. And so it's called The Purple Unicorn is the name of it. But
The Purple Unicorn?
Yes.
Why am I always surrounded by unicorns? I am not kidding.
Because they're magic?
Because the unicorn is really a symbolic thing for a protector, and I have someone who's close to me. His name is Ahura Zakor Deliza. He's a unicorn, and if you know the mystical thing, he's a metaphysical thing. And actually, his show started at 8:30 today. He's back on the air on also Blog Talk Radio, and he's all metaphysical, and he's known as the unicorn, and it really means protector. And I'm sitting there, and it's like then the film that I did this weekend had a unicorn in it. Now you're talking about purple unicorn, and I'm like, what? There's unicorns around me all the time.
There's a magic to it, obviously. There's a reason.
Kind of like
the butterflies for me. And I have a whole big butterfly trail of life story as well.
I mean, seriously, unicorns are really like, a very protective thing. You know, like they show like little girls and stuff and that. But there's all the mystical creatures where they've got it all wrong. You know how they actually show like in Disney and stuff, mermaids, right? They're supposed to be so beautiful. Well, I was going to read about like there's these mystical creatures, but the way that mermaids really were, they used to kill men. That's what it's really. They're sirens of the sea, but they're really evil. And they got all this stuff like Disney showing Ariel and all this stuff, and it's like it's so funny when you really learn what mystical creatures, and then they take it and they totally turn it into something it really wasn't supposed to be. And I'm going, because they're doing all these things about findings of mystical creatures, and mermaids really supposed to drag men to their death in the sea. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then it's like unicorns. You think that they're these cute little, you know how they show, like, all these cute little things like My Little Pony?
Oh, yeah,
stuff
like
that.
Little Pony.
At? Yeah, sure. But it's actually not really like that. They're actually, like, strong, horses, protectors, defenders. And I keep thinking, like, they're like, how can you say if they, in something, they'd be like a martial artist. That's what a unicorn really is a protector, a guardian. And it's like other things where they portray things, it's like, so really a mermaid is really evil. So it's like, it's really funny to think about all these things, what they really are. And so your purple unicorn, now, I just want to know, what purple unicorn, that's the name of the film?
It's the tentative working title.
Okay. But I mean, can you talk about it at all? Or?
What's that?
Are you able to talk about it at all? Because some people, when they first start, because of whatever reason, are you able to, is it another drama?
Oh, God, no. Like I said, it's something utterly absurd along the lines of the Forbidden Zone, but not even close to the Forbidden Zone, and I don't even know if I could write as well as Richard did for that film, but it is, it's whimsical and it's light and it's frothy and it's goofy and it's campy, which, you know, I hope, I, you know, I want that to come across, obviously, when we do get into production of that, probably after the next one, because we have another one that's going to come up first, I think. Because budgetally speaking, it's going to be somewhat costly to do because of the costuming that will be necessary. So we have to probably put it off. Unless, of course, there's anybody out there listening that really wants to invest in the film, then let's talk.
It could be something different, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it hopefully it'll become like a cult classic kind of thing, like a Rocky or a Hedwig or a Forbidden Zone or, you know, any of the bazillion other cult classic, ridiculously absurd films that are out there that have been made. That's kind of my goal on that one. But everything else that I've written is really dramatic and, you know, message-oriented in some respects, which is odd because I never set out that way to write.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of like the way things flowed out of me. They just became these stories of hardships being overcome and strength and empowerment and characters being empowered by, you know, and overcoming adversity to one degree or another, whether it be abuse or drug addiction or whatever. And those are the stories that always come out of me for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's your thing. Everybody has their own thing. And as you were talking, right, I was pulling up the IMDb and I was looking up Forbidden Zone. And I was like, oh, this looks nuts. Because it looks cause it's showing the copy of the DVD.
Kirby and Susan Terrell. I forgot about Susan, but the two of them, they were husband and wife, king and queen of the zone, and, oh, yeah, absolutely absurd. You watch the trailer for it, and you're just like, what?
Yeah, I think it's something where, you know, it's kind of like, did they do drugs while they want it? It looks like that type of picture. It's like, whoa, this looks, I don't know, like,
no,
what?
You don't even need drugs to watch that movie. You really don't need drugs to watch that movie. It's just so beyond, it's a mind expander in and of itself. It's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I can't even say enough about it. It's just so ridiculously campy and absurd and brilliant. And those guys.
Yeah, now I'll be like YouTubing it later going, what is this? What if you got me watching now? Like, what the heck have you got me watching? I'll probably be pissing my pants with laughter. I just got a funny feeling. Yeah, it's like, because I've got sometimes a little bit of a crazy sense of humor, you know. I just really sound pretty much pretty interesting. And so, like, what were some of the favorite things that you've done so far, like with stage or, you know, any films or anything? Have you worked on any Boston productions down in Boston, any sets there or anything?
Yeah, I've done as far as, We'll take stage first. I think the most enjoyable stage production I've ever been on was that first one, was the thing of 12 Angry Men, where the cast of guys were so tight by the end of it, and really, and, you know, actually I can't say that because every stage production has been wonderful, and I've met so many fantastic people out of it, and every film I've been on. I don't know, 4 or 5 Hollywood sets now as an extra, you know, running around as a background guy, you know, split second giving Ryan Reynolds a flat as I pass behind him and things like that. But it's the indie films which really have been fantastic. I mean, the groups of people that, you know, I've been on several indie films as well. And I just got cast recently by Junior Hepburn, and his new film called Blue Suede.
I think he friended me. I didn't know who he was, and I don't know what exactly. I don't know if I had to do some, if this is the one I'm thinking about, something to do with an Asian side and something like that. I don't know if it's a war. Mm-hmm. It was like, I think he asked me to, like, do a little promoting for him, and I said, well, you have to write a little bit about so I can talk about it. And I was like, I didn't understand what he wrote to me. So, you know, and it's like, because he asked me a question, and I got confused because, you know, sometimes the out of communication is lost on the internet because I do that to people a lot. And I'm sitting there thinking, he says, well, do you act? And then he said a couple of sentences, and I was like, was he asking if he wanted me to be in the film? I says, yeah, I act. And then he asked me another question, so I got confused. He says, was he asking me to be in the film? And then asked me other questions, so I was like, okay, I wasn't too sure what he wanted, so I got confused. So I didn't know if he wanted me to talk about, you know, bring it up on my show, so I wasn't too sure what he wanted, and I thought he would get back to me, and I'm like, okay, so, because he kept tagging
hopefully
me.
Hopefully I can talk about it a little bit. I mean, not that I know a whole lot about it, but I know that it's, you know, he has been blasting it across Facebook that it is coming, and a tremendous, what looks like a tremendous cast of people, many of whom I don't know, but I so look forward to meeting and creating with on this project of his. It seems like it's going to be something phenomenal. I mean, I'm very much looking forward to being part of it. But as far as the storyline and stuff, I couldn't even begin to talk about what that might be. So you'll have to wait, people out there in the audience.
Yeah, I want to know, because people get.
Yeah.
I think it's because my show's been growing, so people have been getting in contact with me, and people, it's like word of mouth, like when I'm working on set, and it's like, I told people, because I don't have a car right now, and there's two stipulations, is I need a ride back and forth, and the other thing is Saturdays are totally dedicated to healthcare. I don't know if you've heard about that. That's the one, you know, that I've been.
So in other words, we need to send you a limo. Like in my next production, if I want you to be involved, I have to send you a limo to pick you up and bring you home and all that good stuff.
I mean, that would be nice, but it's kind of like, you know, you can, you know, I tell people the stipulation is, it was really nice, though, the film that I just worked on with Essential Realism, which they're still filming in Maine, which it's really crazy. There's up to 70 cast members in the film. I can't say the plot, but there was pirates, steampunk, vampires, ninjas, which I was in that scene, and then Friday night, because if they get me right back and forth, I'm going to be a zombie, and sometimes people have me do multi-characters in films,
sure.
Because I'm very reliable, and it's word of mouth, and it says, okay, you know, I like with the horrors of Cordelisa, Director Z, I worked with him, and he put me in quite a few roles. He puts me in different ones because I do that. I can, like, play different characters, so... You know, I also do other things on set. You know, if people want me to put on shine makeup, hold a boom mic, if they can set the boom mic. Like, I do other things, not just acting, because it's not beneath me to help on set. And
oh, God, yeah. I mean, like you, I mean, with my own company, I mean, I'm wearing probably 17 different hats on set preparation for a production. You know, it's there's a lot of work, and it's great to have a lot of good people be part of things, and they all wear multiple hats as well, because in the indie world, it's hard when you're first starting to really generate, you know, the 375 people that work behind the scenes on a Hollywood production. You can't get that many people involved, but you can get a good core of people. Like, I think I've been very, very, very fortunate to have create with me. I mean, it's phenomenal. You know, it's a great thing to have that versatility, especially when they have the versatility to say, yeah, do you need me to do props? I can do props. I can do sound. I can do props. I can do catering. I can do, you know, script supervision, and we can do it all at the same time. And it's great. Okay, well, that's a light, you know, a load off.
Yeah, it does help out when you do other things. I'm learning that it's, you know, I think there's other things that I want to learn, you know, behind the scenes. I'm trying to learn how to edit pictures and stuff, look up programs, because, you know, when doing a little bit of stunts and such, I know it's going to be like, I get like worn down a little bit, and you got to keep, you know, I've been like kind of slacking on my working out, but I'm going to have to do more working out, and I figure, like what you're saying, become more valuable an asset, just not acting and learning other things. So if I need to take a break in front of the camera, I'll always have some sort of type of work, you know, to get
paid
for.
I have a funny story about stunts, if you want to hear it.
Yeah,
it was It was such a simple stunt. It was just simply the fall, and it was the first movie that I was ever in called The Id Proxy, where I played a serial killer. And the director of it, Matt Dumond, who is a very, 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 very distant cousin of mine and a very awesome friend. But he at one point during one of the scenes, I had to run and then fall. And one of the 37 different takes that I did falling, I ended up closing my elbows underneath me and jammed one of them up into my ribs. And for the next week, I couldn't breathe, right?
Oh, man, I'm feeling that right now. You sound like you pulled a Shelly Nunchucks.
Yeah, it was so absurdly painful. And, of course, you know, everybody on set laughed at me because it was like, hey, you don't know how to fall. And I'm like, yeah. But, you know, I persevered and they persevered and we got it done. And it was fantastic. But it was definitely a goofball moment with my first stunt experience, if you will. But it was a lot of fun. But I got to kill a lot of people, so that was great. Like, run all the Girl Scouts and stuff like that. That was a lot of fun. No offense to the Girl Scouts of America, but yeah, in one of the scenes, I got to run them down on the road as they were running, trying to run away from me. But I got to run them over.
Oh, gosh. Must have been fun. Must have been fun.
It was fun.
Sounds like you have a really sick, twisted sense of humor. Sounds like it'd be fun to work with on set. No, swear to God, there's something that I want to see done on film set. I don't think this has been done. And I just told the director to do this, like, and I was just kidding around. And it's like, you know, be creative. I want to see, and this is going to be crazy. I'm not going to say the swear word, but I want to see someone's butthole explode on film. Because if you really think about it, having an exploding butthole, I don't know how you would do it, because you'd have exploding heads, like maybe some shoot out of the butt, because I don't think you'd have to do
serious FX makeup kind of situation or CG.
Yeah,
Either way,
be awesome.
But,
you know, the pants, you don't have to be naked, but you're showing the whole butt exploding. I want someone to do it, even if it's never, have my butt explode. I want to die by exploding butthole. And it's like, some comedy, because it hasn't been done. I want to see it done at film. Even if it wasn't me, I want to see death by butt exploding butthole. And because it's just something that I want to see. You know, it's like, hasn't been done. I mean, you see so many different necks being cracked, you know, heads being sliced. I've seen gore and all sorts of stuff, and, you know, in martial arts, they do all crazy, you know, cutting up. Ninja Assassin was pretty sick and intense, where they're all the slicing and dicing. But just think about it. You know, if you're going to do something really crazy, have an exploding butthole in a film. I seriously would love to see someone do that, even if they want to do it to me. Just imagine, like what you said, the special effects. That's got to be cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, what? So, do you think that's possible?
Okay. Say that again, Phil.
So do you think it's possible to do that? Because I know you said about the special effects and the CG and everything like that.
Oh, sure, it's possible. It would take a heck of a lot of work to do something disgusting like that, but sure.
Yeah.
It is possible, right?
You know, if somebody hears this and stuff, or they hear this in the archives, you know, this is going to be one of the shows they're probably going to listen to a lot, because I swear, I don't know what it is, one of my bros, Crosby Tatum, I had some of the guys on there, we started talking about poop, and it's been one of the most listened to shows. If you talk about butts and you talk about crap, it has the biggest talk time, like listen time of all my shows. Yeah. So you might get some, you might be up there with my number one show listened to at all time.
That's
great. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but to get, you know, it's just strange, just very strange. I'm like, what? I was like, what is the fascination with poop? I don't understand.
I mean, everything is gut related is funny in childhood. Right?
Yeah. I guess you say monkeys flinging poo or something. Guys get so excited. It's just like, okay, you say the word poop and they all go, yay!
The old absurdity of pull my finger kind of thing. Well, people like that, and that's great. You know, it makes people laugh. What makes people laugh is the most important thing. And
are you going to get attacked?
Having, you know, making people laugh is very important.
Sounds like you're going to get eaten by a pack of wild dogs there. Are you still with me? You're not getting eaten alive, right?
She's trying to be all tough, and she's really not.
Is that the little fox?
Yep, that's the little fox. The deep voice, when you hear the deep voice, that's my laugh. That's a little...
A woof.
Yeah, she aroofs pretty well.
Yeah, labs are crazy, though. I heard some lab stories. I heard somebody that had two labs that used to eat the walls. Like, they're so hyper.
Walls?
Yeah, they used to eat the walls, the plaster on the walls. They used to try to eat the walls. Like, they had two Labradors, and I've heard that, like, you know, I've worked with dogs before in a doggy daycare in Boston, and I don't know, labs, I tend to think they have a lot of energy, and you really got to get them exercise. If not, I heard they eat the walls.
Mine is chicken wings, the walls, she hasn't done that yet, thankfully.
Oh, that's good. So what are you like working on now?
Oh, goodness. I am working on editing for Turn of Us, for one thing, and trying to get the bond out there and get the screenings set up for that. And I'm working on some TV show that we're working on right now that is maybe picked up by one of the major cable networks.
So with the TV show, when you say TV show, do you mean web series or an actual different type of TV show? Because there's many different things that you consider TV. Is it web? Is it, you know, regular TV?
Actual network television.
Oh, so is it a drama? Are you able to talk about it?
At the moment, I probably should hold off on it.
Okay.
Major announcements are concerned, but it's going to be very, very interesting, and it's music related. To tell you that.
Oh, cool.
So it's a little bit of musical history and a lot of great music is going to be heard in it, and it is a very, very, very interesting thing, especially for musicians out there that are coming up in the industry as well. I think we'll be very intrigued by the stories and the story of the show. But I can't really say a whole lot. My partner and I, we're in a discussion right now with a couple of companies that have some pretty good connections, so we're kind of like waiting to kind of really divulge it all. So sorry. but yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll definitely be interesting. It'll be one awesome experience. I can't wait for it to kind of unfold as it is, you know.
Looking forward to that.
And of course, you know, the other thing that we're doing, we've kind of branched out businessly speaking to use our creativity to help area businesses as well as local bands and other bands to, you know, do promotional videos and some other things and music videos and stuff like that. So we're kind of building that aspect of things while we edit the films and do all this other stuff.
Hmm. And are you hearing me okay? Because it almost sounded a little statically garlicky. Are you coming
all
in?
Right.
Can you hear me okay? Do I sound clear?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Because it's like it could be my connection, and I wanted to make sure it looks like everything's okay. But it's like, I don't know if it's my connection here or if it's just something, just the way it is. But as long as you sound okay and I sound okay, that's fine. Because I was just checking
on stuff. A little crackle, but I don't know if that's due to, because I really haven't moved in the last several minutes, so.
Okay. Because I don't want to lose you or drop, yeah. Yeah, because I'm like, oh, I don't want to drop the call here.
Yeah, that would be bad. But, no,
yeah.
I think, I mean, the interesting thing, I think, as far as what I've experienced over the last 8 years especially, it's, you know, since I made that first film, or started making the first film, is just how incredibly talented so many people are in this New England area that haven't really been discovered on the national scale, on the national screen, you know, stage. But they should be. And they will be. I believe that they will be as well. I mean, there are so many brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people, artists and actors and musicians as well, that are just waiting. They're bubbling right to the surface, you know. And they're about to launch. Well, many of them are about to launch. And I've been blessed to work with a lot of them.
Yeah, we do get our share of people that we like to work with, and they've had, you know, crazy experiences, stuff, people. I mean, there's people that I actually enjoy working with, and it's like maybe someday we'll work together. And because I make connections with people, and I'm like, man, you know, it's too bad there's, like, this doesn't seem like enough time. Because when I talk with my guests, I wish to hope to, like, work with them. You seem like you'd really be great fun to work with on a set.
Yeah, we do like to have a lot of fun, and thank you very much for that. I mean, we do like to have a lot of fun. I know that my second AD on The Bond, Diana Porter, who is now just blossoming as an actress, very, very, very talented lady, she started this joke on The Bond when I was directing that, and calling me a tyrant, which was like the absolute opposite of the way that I was in reality on set. And it was became this running joke where I was the tyrant, and I'd be like, because I was so laid back and just enjoying the whole process, probably a little bit too much for efficiency's sake, for Hollywood efficiency. But I had such a blast doing it with so many tremendous people. And Diana, as a matter of fact, my wife actually cast her to play my character's wife in Fraternitas. So she and I got to act together, you know, act opposite each other, and she got to, you know, unleash a lot of her maybe pent-up frustrations about me being so freewheeling in the film production world. But she, you know, she and I got to act opposite each other, and that was just like a dream come true, because she's so unbelievably brilliant as an actress, I think.
How was it to work with her? Like, you know, did you guys ever want to kill each other on set? I mean, was there ever time that you could walk through?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The interesting thing was that and she and I have talked about it, and my wife and I have talked about it as well, is my wife did an amazing job of casting her as my wife in the film. And she actually bears a lot of similar characteristics to my actual wife. So it was interesting to bring some of that into the character as she did, and personality-wise, I mean, we get along unbelievably well. She's very inspirational to me as far as some of the creative things that envisions, and kind of steering some things, you know, either be it in editing or in just overall creativity. She's phenomenal. She's so diverse and so talented, and everybody should hire her to be an actress on that film.
Well,
I really should. I mean, seriously speaking, no, to be like totally serious for a moment, I watched a an episode of Law and Order SVU a while back, which is one of my favorite shows, and it's absurdly disgustingly sad most of the time, but because of my law enforcement, it's always been one of my favorite shows. But there was an episode with Laura Linney on it, and I was watching it, and I saw a lot of Diana in how Laura acts, and not only in the somewhat in the physical sense, in the look sense, but in very much in the way that the two of them kind of bring out their characters. Diana definitely like draws on that, or is able to do similar things that Laura Linney is able to do, and it just blew me away that I was seeing that as a critic, you know, trying to be as objective as possible. I love criticizing things, and watching that, I'm like, oh my God, this lady is. And as a matter of fact, the Laura Linney thing is interesting because Howard Platt is our executive producer of Fraternitas. I don't know if, do you know Howard Platt?
The what?
Howard, a man, his name is Howard Platt.
I don't know.
He's a longtime actor. He was on like the Bob Newhart Show, Sanford and Son, and he was in Nixon.
Oh, okay.
He's done a lot of stage and TV and film over the years, and he's a good friend of mine. But he's our executive producer, and when we first got together and started talking about him coming on board the film, he had mentioned, because he's good friends with Laura Linney, he's like, yeah, I can get you Laura Linney to play your wife in the film. And I went, well, Diana already has the role. She had already been cast. And I was, you know, just thinking to myself, you know, first and foremost, how in the world could I possibly act opposite Laura Linney? But, you know, an Oscar winner and someone on that magnitude. But as I came to find out, you know, through acting opposite Diana, it was a similar kind of mindset in my head, because she was so powerful. In the moments where she needed to be powerful, she was unbelievably powerful. In the moments where she needed to be, you know, the sensitive, caring, loving wife person, she was exactly that. She was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it would throw me sometimes almost to act opposite that kind of ability. And it was fantastic. It was just a great experience overall to be able to do that. So, you know, and I had to tell Howard, sorry, we already have someone, not Laura.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
But, you know, someday we'll get Laura involved. Would be nice. I'd love to direct her.
Well, you know, anything's possible.
Anything is possible. I mean, that's one of our mottos at Sporting Turtle at my company, is that, you know, we make the impossible possible every day. I kind of borrowed that from Brian Viglione from the Dresden Dolls, because he had said that to me one time, and I'm like, I like that. I'm going to use that. So I'll give him a little attribute on that. Thank you, Brian.
That's pretty funny.
But yeah, I mean, it's and that's what I'm saying about the talent at the indie level, and it's not necessarily just here in New England where there's an immense amount of talent, because I also used to run an indie film series where I would get films from all over the country and all over the world and screen them here in New Hampshire for, you know, indie film aficionados. And one of the films that I did screen that I think is one of the best films that I've ever seen as far as indie film people are concerned was done by some twin sisters that are out of Vancouver called the Twisted Twins. They call themselves the Twisted Twins. And they did this film called Dead Hooker in a Trunk, which is just this amazing grindhouse film. Rodriguez would be I'm sure he's probably seen it by now, but because they've blown up huge. They actually got tapped by Lionsgate to direct the new See No Evil 2. And, you know, it just goes to show you perseverance, quality, creativity, and just absolute drive pays off or can pay off, you know?
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. It's like it's, you may say anything's possible. You just got to work for it.
Mm-hmm. And I've said that going back to my journalism days when I talked with hundreds of musicians, both those who have succeeded, like the Greg Allmans and the Jeff Tates of the world, and those who are coming up, like the Brian Biggs and the Troy Kidwells and the Ty Snitkos. What I ultimately kind of realized was if you have the talent and the drive, that's what makes it. Because you can have all the talent in the world as a musician, as an actor, as a writer, as a cook, or whatever. It doesn't matter. I mean, you could be the greatest carpenter in the world, but if you don't care about pounding a nail into a board, you're never going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You have to have that drive, that passion for what it is you're doing, regardless of what it is. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it could be anything. It could be grooming horses. You know what I mean? It's the talent and the drive, the combination.
Yeah. The passion, passion too, like passion.
Yeah, exactly. But if you have that, you can go places. But if you only have the talent and no drive, you're really not going to go anywhere. Like, oh, I'm great. Well, fantastic. I can play, you know, Mozart on the guitar. Well, big deal. Do you have the heart to really go out there and try to do what you need to do to make it happen? Well, no, I don't care. I can just play. Well, no, it doesn't work that way. You need to. If you have it and you have that ability and the heart, you can make it happen for yourself. It's that wicked dual combination, I think. And you see it all the time. I mean, these people dedicate themselves, the ones who have actually made it in their particular industry, they've dedicated their whole lives. You know, everything they do, every waking moment, they try to make themselves better at what they're doing and make it happen for themselves, and they do. Like the Twisted Twins, for example.
That's so funny. I'm thinking of something, when you say Twisted Twins, I'm looking at something like, I'm thinking of, you know, something out of like The Grudge or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you say twins, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, but that's kind of like the kind of films that they made. I mean, the Dead Hooker in a Trunk movie was a grindhouse film. They did a second film called American Mary, which I have not seen yet, and I am really just kicking myself every time I talk about them and I say I have not seen that movie. I kick myself because I need to see that movie. But it was after that movie, American Mary, which went international, has gone international. And it's on Netflix and it's, you know, wherever. But that's when Lionsgate went. Somebody at Lionsgate must have went, hey, holy crap, I saw this movie and wow, we need these girls to come in and direct See No Evil 2. Which, you know, I mean, how does that happen? It happens through dedication and drive and passion for what you're doing, because these ladies absolutely have it. And I think a lot of people in New England also have it. I mean, people like Diana, JR, I mean, these people have passion and they have incredible talent. And there's no end to where all these people can go. And I think that with the ideas, especially the storylines that some of these people come up with, you know, the JRs and others, I mean, there's amazing stories. The creativity and the newness of ideas are astounding. you know, considering like Hollywood is constantly like regurgitating old stuff. And we're gonna remake blah blah blah, and it's like, really? We're gonna remake Star Trek? Well, I love the first Star Trek. I love the new one too, but did we really need to redo it again?
No. Yeah, or what are they doing? They're doing Carrie again.
Carrie, yeah, there's another one.
Yeah.
Perfect. Other than the fact that there's CG capabilities now that they weren't in the early 70s when they first did it, why would you redo Sissy Spacek? Why? There's no need for that because she was so ridiculously brilliant. There's no need, but they are because whatever. Nobody wants to watch the original for some stupid reason, they think.
Yeah, it's something you just don't know.
Right, but if they were to look to people like JR or like the Twisted Twins or like John Elfers, another guy or a friend of mine who's in LA now, or Ted Payson or Matt Dumont, I mean, these people have these ideas that are so unique and so creative and so different from what is churned out.
This is
the new breed to come in reinvigorate things.
I think I actually have a caller in the chat room and stuff. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Let me
No, that's fine. I talk a lot, but.
Yeah, no, that's why we get along great. That's why I'm hoping to work with you someday, Rick. So let me see. Give me one moment here. Hello, caller.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hello, Shelly.
Hi, Z.
Hi.
Hey.
How you doing?
How's Z? Doing well.
good. I was listening to your guest speaker.
Oh, yes, Rick.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm good. Good. I think you're right. I think that a lot of people, some of the things I was listening to, that people have a lot of talent, but then they don't have the drive, and they don't realize that show business is kind of short on show and long on business. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if it's one thing that you have the ability to do something, but if you have the ability to do something and no guidance. Or no drive or no passion about it, then it really doesn't matter.
Oh yeah, I mean I've known some people talking musically for a moment, but I've known some people who could play the guitar that the fingers flying across the fret, which is so amazing to watch, but yet they had no heart to really pursue that. And of course, they don't go anywhere, and it's like. Oh, what a waste of talent. It's like being 7'2" and not playing basketball.
Yeah. Well, you know, it comes down to what a person really wants to do. Sometimes that particular desire gets killed in them or just, you know, gets beat down in them. And it's unfortunate, but it does actually happen, you know.
Sure.
I remember growing up and, you know, I had a phenomenal talent and still do for doing music and things like that. But all around me, it was just people saying things, silly things like, well, you got to have something to fall back on. That's not really a dependable, you know. And had I not been the person that I am, I might have let that defeat me. But I've seen some other people just get defeated by it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is unfortunate. But I just want to kind of, not that you need it, but to validate what you were saying.
Well, I appreciate that. I totally where you're coming from as well, because and kudos to you for not stopping. I was one of those people who stopped because back in high school I did a stage play. I was in The Wizard of Oz and I played one of the flying monkeys and had just this amazingly awesome experience and knew at that point that was something that I really, really, really wanted to do. But at the same time I was caught in this click of the jock world.
Right.
That back in, I mean, I don't know if it's the same today, but back in my day, it was if you wanted to do theater or if you wanted to play music, you were pretty much gay.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
Yeah,
but see,
and I fell into it, and I believed that stupidity, and stopped, and I didn't pursue it any further until,
well,
you know, 2001, when I finally went, saw Brian, and went, shit, I could do this stuff. Why can't I do this? I want to do this. I've loved this stuff all my life. Why can't I do this stuff? I'm going to try. And
that's awesome.
Here we go. Yeah.
But you've seen, you know, one of the things that I think is very positive. I don't know if you kept up with any of the Hindi theater or Bollywood is what we call it.
Bollywood, love Bollywood.
I mean, the shows are phenomenal, and I doubt that anybody would go up to these guys and call them gay. But I think that the fact that we have to label something as gay, straight, or otherwise, just because someone loves doing it, is absolutely absurd, because there's phenomenal talent out there.
Oh yeah,
and
well, you know what one thing that Hollywood is doing that kind of burst that gay bubble.
Is
Dancing with the Stars.
Okay.
Because you see the football players especially coming on that show, starting with Emmitt Smith and, you know, going all the way through. And I remember, and I'm going to date myself a little bit, but one of my favorite football players of all time was Lynn Swann.
Okay, you're dating both of us.
Well, I remember his football card, and on the back of his football card, in one of the years, it might have been like 76 or 77, whatever it was, that said that he had studied ballet.
Yeah.
Back in the
day.
Right. And
sure did.
And my brother and I at the time were like, a football, but you could see it in the way the guy played football. I mean, the fluidity of his movements was just astounding. But and of course his name fit him perfectly. But it was like that was the only thing. But then somehow it got not Lynn himself, and that idea got perverted. But the idea of mixing dance or creativity with football became that masculine. It had to be a masculine thing. Well, if you're masculine, you're not going to dance, right?
Well, Shelly can tell you, you know, I was one of the best bouncers, one of the bouncers in Los Angeles, and I danced quite avidly.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I taught dance for a long time. So,
excellent.
You know, I was one of those that fought against.
Give me a Dance with the Stars, because I wanted to be on that show.
Oh, I would have liked to be on that show too, but you know,
but
people tell me I have a face for radio, so.
I've heard that I have a voice for radio. I don't know about the face, but the idea that Dancing with the Stars is now shattering that, and not necessarily consciously, but they're doing it in such a way that. Yeah, Jerry Rice, Super Bowl hero, Keyshawn Johnson, Emmitt Smith, all these huge football players are coming on the show. Warren Sapp, for Christ's sake, was on that show one year. And to showcase that these guys are actually willing to dance, and they kind of make a little bit of mockery about it, you know, every once in a while with the femininity and the makeup and all that stuff. But
hey, that's
but,
theater.
But, it,
hey.
But it's, it is, it is, and it's great because – it shows that you don't. It's shatter that the stupid cliquism of the Breakfast Club, like the movie did. And you can be whoever you be yourself. Be yourself.
Oh yeah, definitely. And, I mean, I just wanted to come on and validate a few things, but Shelley can tell you. Listen, I'm all about the arts. I'm all about musical theater. I'm all about movies and making things happen. And
are you
as far
local?
As the, I'm actually not far from Shelley. We used to live right down the street from each other. I'm a Horizee, by the way, and I'm Shelley's big brother.
Okay.
And you know, I just wanted to say, you know, her show is great, and I hope that more people listen. I did my show this evening too, a little earlier, and it was fun, and hopefully a lot of the listeners came over to you guys because I think what you're talking about is very, very, very interesting. And I think that people need to break down the walls as there's Hollywood, and then there's the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. And but the rest of us are equally, if not to certain extents, more innovative, and I mean certainly more innovative, because you have
to be. We're poor.
All that starving artist thing is just so real, isn't it?
it's
fantastic, and I appreciate that. I mean, dude, I want to talk with you more too. Anyway, yeah.
Well, sure. I just wanted to come on and say, you know, what you're talking about is very, very interesting. I think that the more of us artists that find each other and wake each other up to saying, listen, you're supposed to do what you love to do, not what people tell you to do, that the arts will be a lot better, because Shelley got told many, many times and never given the chance to do what she really wanted to do. And she still persisted, and she's doing some pretty cool things now. You know,
that's
so
awesome.
Anyway, I'd love to meet you in person at some point in time. I just wanted to call in and say, hey, you know, you're right about this particular thing. You know, so
I appreciate that, man.
Shelley,
let's do that.
Yeah, Shelley, good shout out to you and so forth. And everybody, please listen to Shelley. Shelley's good at what she does.
Yes, she is. And in the cliche statement of Hollywood, which society has turned into a cliche, I think. But let's talk and do lunch at some point. But
at some point, yes, I would love to. I'll talk to you soon. Shelley has my contact information anyway, so I'll let her get back to her show. Yeah, good talking to you, Shelley.
Okay, nice, baby. See you on Saturday.
Okay, see you, sweetheart. Bye bye.
All right, bye. It sounds like your dogs are going to eat everyone.
Yeah, they're yelling at somebody out there.
Yeah.
Probably a deer. Probably a deer.
Good guard dogs. And, so, like, I can't believe the time has gone by so fast. And it looks like, you know, I got about 20 minutes here. And I know, is there anything that you want to talk about, touch base on, any stuff that you're going to be working on in the future, anybody you're going to be working with?
Future? I think, I mean, a lot of the people that I work with now and have worked with over the last 8 years are certainly hopefully coming back for more, as they have, which I am so grateful for. But as far as the future, I mean, I have a list of probably about, 20 or so name actors that I definitely want to work with at some point,
mm-hmm.
and create some sort of movie magic with. I think, I just love what I'm doing. I just love that. To me, this whole entire experience over the last 8 years has been like surfing a tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people on the board, on the surfboard, the better it has become, and I've been so blessed in the sense of having these people come on and say, yeah, let's create, and of course, you know, having other directors, other movie directors going, yeah, I want you in my film, and I'm like, it's phenomenal. It's just been such a great ride. And not knowing where it's going, or not knowing how it's going, or where it's going to end, if it's ever going to end. Hopefully it doesn't ever end. But the idea of just seeing where it goes and keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing, but to just kind of take it where things happen. Does that make sense?
I know exactly what you mean, because it's like, you know how you plan on something, a film or something, you want it to go in a certain way. It doesn't always go the certain way, but it always ends up in this wonderful place. It's
mm-hmm.
kind of like, you know, it's a path you're following, and everybody has a path, and it's all different. It's like your path is different than my path, but it seems like I go off and I branch and I meet great, wonderful people, and I keep asking, you know, I try not to get too religious or anything like that because, you know, it's not stuff. I don't really talk about politics and stuff, but I just have a belief, you know, with the God and universe and everything. It's like, I think because I keep asking, bring people, you know, intellectual people in my life that do have the experience of working on set, but they're not so, they have an ego. And they understand, you know, about me, and that, those are the people that I want in my life. And they're like, okay, you know,
that's kind of the way I look at it as well, Shelley. I mean, I'd say many, many, many of the people that I've been able to create with are kindred spirits of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, and that's why it's been so wonderful to have, to, you know, from even going back from 2005. When I first started, all the way up, or even 2003, because I got to give Bill Nichols kudos, because he's the bugger that really started it all, putting me on stage, and he just directed Fraternitas for me. So it's, he, you know, 10 years, this guy's still around. He, you know, when I called him 2 years ago and said, hey, I want you to direct this movie, and he went, okay. And did a phenomenal job of doing it. So going back 10 years of creativity and having all these people still there is, I can't even tell you, my heart's like freaking drooling down the stairs because it melts so much because of it, you know? And I think moving forward, the future, you know, as Tom Petty said, the future is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
and just so filled with opportunity and more creativity and more communal create. Because making a film is communal anyway. You can't do it by yourself. You can't do a good one by yourself.
That's
for sure.
You do need help. You need people that help collaborate and, you know, understand your creativity. And I think that when you have many different people and you're all different, sometimes, you know, that can work out to an advantage. Because sometimes when you don't, you know, many different people, when I did a film called Inventory, we were all different types of people, different type of actors. And I was wondering, because it was a slacker film, and it was by Justin Fielding back in Boston, Dennis Hurley was in it, and a bunch of other actors were in it, and I was like, how the heck am I going to fit into this film? Because it wasn't an action film and such, and they just said, you know, we decided to play these characters, and they just ran with it. And we ended up being slackers paired up with our person counting furniture in a big furniture store, and they actually took what I love, you know, Jackie Chan, wrote it into my character. And I played, like, I want to be called Jackie Chan and not Maria and all this stuff. So they took what I loved, and it worked for the film. So it's like sometimes when, you know, you're these different types of actors, sometimes you end up working on a really great film, something comes out wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're lucky to have, you know, the producer, writer, directors of these films that are willing to listen to you know, to other ideas, to open, they're open to the possibilities of something, especially when it comes to the writing. I think that's probably the most important thing is at least from my perspective, when I've written a dozen screenplays, and I like the idea of having another set of eyes. So, okay, this is what I put together. What do you think? Can you add to this? Can, you know, what needs to be adjusted? What needs to be changed? You know, dialogue-wise or scene-wise or layout-wise, and have more eyes on the project and say, okay, yes. What about if we try this? And I'll go, yeah, that'll work. Or maybe no, this I don't like that idea because it deviates too much from the theme. But but overall, it's such a communal thing. You know, I mean, you take for example Tom Hanks in the heck was the name of that movie where he sat on the island with with the volleyball.
Oh, gosh, you have to see that.
Somebody IMDb that and call it in right now.
Wait. You really had to do that to me right now?
I'm sorry.
Wilson. I'm trying to think of it because it was like he's stuck in there, and I know he lost weight, and his hair turned blonde, and he had to go back to civilization.
But the point is that he was all alone in that entire movie. Pretty much the entire movie. He was by himself for, 80 of the 95 minutes of the movie?
Mm-hmm.
But yet, he can't do that by himself. Even if he wrote the thing, he couldn't do it by himself. He needs a cinematographer. He needs a sound guy. He needs a director. There's 15, 25, 30 other people that he absolutely needs to have with him to make that happen. And that's why film, to me, is both my love, because I am a communal person. I'm a freaking hippie. I love creating with people. But at the same time, it's kind of my nemesis, because at the same time, it's so much easier. It would be so much easier if I was a painter or a photographer, where I don't need 75, 150 people to tell a story. I have a board and a paintbrush.
Yeah.
I could paint. I kind of fluctuate in my own head, but I love making movies, and it's kind of one of the things that I think I found the niche. When you're in life and you go through and you try to figure out what you're supposed to be here for.
Yeah, how you said follow your niche? Well, this guy, he's a stunt guy I had on my show. He actually fought Jet Li and he interviewed Jackie Chan. His name is Johnny Crane. And he told me to follow your bliss. And you're saying follow, it's all this connection. I'm like, oh, my gosh, because he told me that last year. And I found out follow my bliss is actually my radio show. And I'm sitting there going over the reports and see a total of people have listened to my show, because I've been doing the show for over a year. And I've held over, 50,000 people. It's something like a phenomenal amount. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm actually doing something, and this is something that I'm doing well, and I'm kind of like, wow, I'm really doing it that well, and here I am. I never went to school for it or this or that. It's just a natural thing that I can do, and follow my bliss. You also get happy, and looking for syndication, this is my thing. Everybody has to find their thing, like acting or whatever it is, and just like what you said, follow your niche. Is that the correct term? I always talk funny,
absolutely.
But niche?
I think you're absolutely right.
Niche.
I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, it doesn't have to be film. It doesn't have to be acting. It could be anything. It could be fixing cars or building a house or vacuuming or dishwashing or cooking. It could be anything. And that's when it's your niche, you know it. And you want to do it to the best of your
Yes.
but it's all an art form. I mean, I was talking with someone just the other day whose husband is a home renovator guy. And I can't pound a nail to save my life. But this guy's thing is fixing houses and building decks and making bathrooms look beautiful and all that good stuff. And she was like, she was commenting about how her husband doesn't necessarily have an art thing in him. And I'm like, yeah, of course he does. He's building things. That's an art form in and of itself. Her selling houses is an art form in and of itself. Everything can be artistic if you look at it from the right perspective. And, cooking is obviously an art form. I mean, some of the plates that you see on the Food Network or whatever, they're gorgeous, or any restaurant you walk into. I mean, certainly, even if people who worked at Burger King cared, or any of the fast food joints, not the Slam Burger King, but any of the fast food places actually cared about what they were producing, they would look like the commercials.
Yeah,
the commercials
so
make them look so good, but yet in reality, you know, oftentimes you don't. But I think, you know, everything can be an art form. Dog grooming, dog walking, it's all in how you approach what you do. And if you
wait a minute,
like,
you're talking about like the dog walking. I got to tell you, I work for a doggy daycare, okay, and I was stuck in a room. So it's like out of my, the film inventory, it was actually in the film. You're talking about an art form. The only thing is, working for a doggy daycare, you had to pick up a lot of crap. So
of
it's kind
of
like,
and
I don't know if that you can say it's an art form, but.
But it is, because, if you think about it, okay, because I do that in my yard all the time. I have to pick up for two dogs. And, you know, there's a certain pattern by which I traverse my yard looking for poop, looking for those landmines. So there's a pattern, so there's an art to how you patternize your walk across the yard. And then, of course, when you go to where you go to finally empty the bucket of all of what you find, you know, it's in a certain place in the whole scheme of wherever it is you live. So art, maybe that's not necessarily artistic, but certainly the patterning of where it is, of how you go through your yard, why couldn't that be an art? Because you have to grid it out. I mean, math is an art, wouldn't you say? Being a mathematical genius?
Science, I guess you can say that,
Science is an art. Determining,
that's true.
You know, if you combine this chemical with this chemical, you get something else and go, wow, there's an art to that. Not necessarily in the classic societal viewpoint, or certain aspects of society don't necessarily view it as an art, but I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, if you really think about it, everything
gardening
is an art.
It's all an art. Everything baseline is, there's an art to pretty much everything you do. I can't think of anything where there isn't.
Yeah, even martial arts, it's an art form. You're putting your body into an art form. You know,
Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, two of the most amazing artists of our time. These guys created things that nobody else ever conceived of, you know, and sparked a whole new revolution of art form, you know, people creating things within what they created.
Yeah.
Giant
umbrella. I would love to do that. Like, you know, I would love to create something like something so tiny. I mean, if you really think about, you know, drinks, right? Those little umbrellas, you can open them up. They're made like of a little stick. Imagine the person that made the umbrellas for those drinks, a little tiny thing like that, and they're billionaires. It's kind of like that's what I would love to do with invent something.
Well, speaking of drinks, okay, I do have a drink for everybody out there. It's called the Sweaty Turtle. Yes.
What the Sweaty Turtle?
Well, it's named after my company. And, you know, you brought it up, so I have to pimp it up. It was actually invented by a bartender at a place where we did a fashion show last year. And it's, it's vodka and Midori and Sprite. And you mix those three together, and if you really want to make it a heavy Sweaty Turtle, you slush it up.
Well, can you put anything, what happens if you put Red Bull in it? Does it become like a Sweaty Ninja Turtle?
I never thought of that, but that's a good idea. I love it. I love that. Yes. All right. We'll go Sweaty Ninja. Absolutely.
Yes. Sweaty Ninja
Absolutely.
Turtle. Well, it looks like You know, time, I cannot believe it has gone by that fast. We have a minute left or so because I always play my song. And it's like, is there any shout-out you'd like to give to anybody that inspires you? You know, would you like to, you know, say hi to your wife or something like that? Show her some love.
I show her. They all give me love, man. Every single person that I have been able to create with since I started doing this craziness, you guys are all phenomenal. From Dana and Chris and Carrie and Ty and Carrie and Jeannie and everybody who started way back when, and Ad. Here's a guy for you. Ad Frank. Let me give him the biggest shout. This dude, phenomenal musician, unbelievable lyricist. I turned him into an actor in 2005 in Brothers in Communion, and he has acted in every one of my films, and he will act in every single one of my films moving forward because I say so. And I love him dearly, and he's awesome, and he's great. And listen to his music and watch him in my movies, too, because he's awesome. He's just great. So there's the biggest shout for Ed because he deserves it. He's the man.
You're the man.
He is the man. He's Boston-based. He's a phenomenal human being, but he's so talented, and he's a great lyricist and great musician, and never really wanted to be an actor, but I said, dude, you need to act in this movie, and then I came back with a second one a couple of years later and said, dude, you need to act in this movie, and dude, you need to act in this movie, and I just want to, I give the people I love and people I care about and the kindreds and all these talented people that I get to come in contact with, I love giving them an opportunity for if they want to be part of whatever it is I do.
Yeah, you sound just like me, Rick, just like me, and I do appreciate, you know, being on my show tonight. I cannot believe the time has gone by fast.
I
told you,
either.
It's like, you know, it's like we can talk and talk. It's like next time we have to have, like, tea and crumpets or something like that, you know? I'm drinking
like
my
crumpets.
Oolong tea, yeah. I never had
what
crumpets,
is, what
but
is
I hear
crumpet
in
the, anyway?
I don't know, maybe it's like a croissant, you know, like a croissant.
we could be very frou-frou about it, yes. That would be very lovely. But yeah, I can see you being in the purple unicorn.
The purple unicorn. I want to be the head, though. If I'm going to be the unicorn, I got to be the head. I don't want to be the butt.
We'll see about that. But I think it's more of a stuffed animal, but we'll see.
Okay, well, anyway, it looks like time is running out. So once again, Rick, thank you so much for being on the show, and maybe you'll be
thank
a guest.
You,
and, you know, keep in touch. You know, you can always send a message hi to me on Facebook, and be careful that those doggies don't eat you up. Go feed them.
Yeah, they're trying to keep the deer away from the crabapple trees.
Okay.
It doesn't work very well, but they try.
Well, thanks again, Rick, and you have a good evening.
You too, hon.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, see, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. I keep getting people more and more, and they always say, as Johnny Crane told me, follow my bliss, and Rick tonight saying, follow your niche, and there you go. There you have it. Follow my circle, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in, and like I said, I looked up the reports and stuff, and from a whole year, I have over 50,000, you know, people listening to my show. Never thought I'd go this far, but, you know, once again, thanks, Rick, for, you know, being a guest. And thanks, Z, Brother Z, for calling in. Best wishes to his show and looking to working on Falcare and Essential Realism. Oh, boy, that was a ball, working as a ninja on there, as head ninja, and I think I shall be a zombie in the film, too. I love it. Love him playing the crazy characters. Anyway, remember, if you have a dream out there, no matter who you are, whatever you want to do, you're as good enough as anybody else, because if I can do it, Shelly Lynchuk's, a girl that talks funny, you know, is an underdog, if I can do it, you can do it, too. Anyway, everyone, have a good night. Bye-bye.